Welcome. I'm your host, Scott Slater, Vice President of Practice Management and Consulting at Fidelity Investments, and you're listening to Future Ready through M&A. In today's episode, we're going to talk about the importance of defining your why. Why is it important for a firm to define its larger purpose before entering into a transaction? And how can defining your purpose help the firm and you achieve your desired outcome? We will chat with Adam Bierenbaum, CEO of Buckingham Strategic Wealth, and Jeff Johnson, former president of Executive Wealth Management, who sold his firm to Buckingham in 2017. Adam and Jeff will talk about why they decided to come together, what the experience was like, and how that has enabled them to continue growing today. As our series name, Future Ready through M&A, suggests, this podcast is about all things M&A in the independent wealth management space. So what I'm about to say may seem completely contrary to our show. Are you ready? M&A is not the point. Don't do a transaction just to do a transaction. Now, okay, that might seem obvious to many of our listeners, but you would be surprised how many deals begin unexpectedly or opportunistically, but without true intention behind the transaction. Many firms fall into the trap of entering into a transaction because that's what they think they're supposed to do. So how should you be approaching M&A? M&A is a means of achieving a larger and more important endgame for your firm, your clients, and your employees. And you need to know what that core strategy and objective is before you execute an M&A deal. You need to have an answer as to why you are doing a particular transaction, or any transaction at all. NYU Stern Business School professor Aswath Damodaran, a recognized expert on valuation, spoke at the 2018 CFA Institute Equity Research Conference, and he had a blunt message for large companies considering large-scale transactions. Don't do it. He even goes so far as to say he immediately sells the stocks of firms that announce a major acquisition. He says, "I firmly believe that acquisitions are an addiction, that once companies start to grow through acquisitions, they cannot stop. Everything about the M&A process has all the hallmarks of an addiction." Quite a statement. According to Professor Damodaran, many transactions end up reversed after 10 years because they merged for the wrong reasons, almost half of them, according to a McKinsey study. Why? In many cases, because for just that fact, they merged for the wrong reasons, or reasons that really weren't clear at the outset. Now, I know there are those of you who are listening who are no doubt saying, "Great, I always thought that M&A was a distraction, and based on what Scott is saying now, I'm not going to engage today in an M&A strategy." But don't be so quick to discount M&A in such a fragmented industry as ours. It's important to decide where you stand in regard to M&A as we see the structure of our industry change, and change rapidly. We're seeing just how active the market is each month in our Fidelity M&A transaction report, and I continue to contend advisors should consider getting into the M&A game, but only if they are intentional and thoughtful. Many firms fall into the trap of thinking they need M&A to grow if their organic growth has slowed, or they're having trouble managing and integrating their technology platform. But in fact, it's the opposite. You need to be in a good place to find the right company or partner to merge with, and you need to be aligned with your larger purpose. Finding a partner or a firm that shares your vision in order to have a successful merger. And third parties, by the way, something we've talked about in the first season of Future Ready through M&A, can be very useful to you for helping you get clarity on your strategy and the best options to achieve it. Having clarity on your goals and understanding your options will help you to find the right partner, someone with a clearly aligned set of interests towards similar end goals, and ultimately build a better business. And frankly, I would add, to make you happier, too. Throughout the season, we'll highlight firms that have different goals for entering into deals and how those motivating factors help shape their M&A transaction. Ask these questions, for instance. Are firms entering into a transaction to add to their capabilities to serve clients? Is it to cut costs by getting larger? Is it to expand geographically? Acquire a particular skill set or key leaders? By answering these questions first, you'll pave the way for a smoother transaction with a higher upside for success. To that end, I'd like to kick off the season and find out how our first guests approach these important challenges. We're joined today by Adam Bierenbaum, Chairman and CEO of Buckingham Strategic Wealth, and Jeff Johnson, wealth advisor at Buckingham and former president of Executive Wealth Management, which he sold in 2017 to Buckingham. Thank you for being here, gentlemen.
Sure. So first, a pleasure to be here. And thanks so much to you and to the audience for tuning in.
Let's start with you, Adam. Tell us a little bit about Buckingham. I know many people know about it, but why don't you, you know, when was it founded? How big are you today? How many locations do you have? How many advisors? Tell us a little bit about it.
So Buckingham was founded back in 1994 and really got rolling in 1995. And, you know, simple vision of helping a lot of people, having fun and you know, having a few dollars under management. I joined in 2003, but today Buckingham itself, the wealth management side of the business, is over $16 billion of assets, and that's alongside private wealth clients, 401k clients, and some institutional clients as well. And then the other side of our business, we refer to it as a partner, a comprehensive partner to other like-minded advisors. Some folks think about it as a TAMP. Really has roughly over $35 billion of assets in it. And so collectively, the Buckingham family, as we often refer to it, is over $50 billion of assets and spread across over 30 offices and 450 collective team members. And we're really proud of what we've built and the number of people that we've hopefully positively impacted their lives.
There really were, as I see it, there are three key decisions that have been pivotal and turning points at your firm. Probably the formation of the what you referred to as a TAMP, working with a lot of partner firms, and you can tell us a little bit about that. And then I would say joining Focus Financial Partners as being one of the early partner firms back in, I believe it was 2007. And then the third thing is succeeding from the founding generation to the current leadership team that you are now in charge of. So tell us about it and what were some of the issues that the firm faced as they made each of those kind of choices, and how does that all make you what you are today?
The formation of BAM, which happened really in 2007 and 2008, was an outgrowth of the beginning of our wealth management firm, Buckingham. And we just saw it as an opportunity to take all of the lessons and the learnings that we had in building what we thought was going to be an amazing wealth management firm and help others. So we knew that there were going to be folks that simply wanted to have their own businesses, their own independent branding, but they wanted to tap into the resources of a larger organization and outsource as much as they can. And so our goal was to provide that time back to advisors so they in turn could have these amazing businesses. But Focus was a turning point. It helped us to solve some challenges that we had. And the reality is, and I always say this to others, which is we did our transaction with Focus to really become the organization that we have become today. It was not about selling out. It was about utilizing a partner to catapult us to new heights.
Well, and that's a big message of our conversation today, is about being that intentional around why you're doing a transaction. So that's helpful to understand that. So at the same time, then, you were doing succession too, which you have completed several years ago now, and you've been leading the firm for quite a few years. So can you say a little bit about that decision as well?
Sure. And I think actually the word you just used was intentional. And I think that's the way I would describe the way our founders thought about succession. You know, they started their efforts before they really needed to, right? They were still in the prime of their careers, but they wanted to build an organization that had, and we like to use this word, sustainability. And so they thought about it well in advance of when they needed to, and they wanted to surround themselves with, you know, different types of talent and folks with different ambitions, at different ages, different motivations, and really operate in a proactive way to put those plans in place. And the reality is that by doing so, it allowed us to also have an awesome mentoring arrangement, almost an apprenticeship type of a circumstance, where they put next generation leadership in place while they were still around, while they still had the opportunity to have impact and influence. And truly help guide us.
Well, it's very forward thinking of them. I think it helps our audience to think about, well, what are the pivotal decisions they've made in their own organization? Well, that leads to the next stage. I don't believe you were doing a lot of M&A until maybe 2010 or somewhere in that range. Tell us a little bit about your strategic decisions as to why you decided to pursue an M&A strategy and why that was the right time for Buckingham.
Sure, happy to. So we did our first transaction in actually October of 2010. And it is important for your audience to also be aware, we actually looked at this for 3 years. So if you think about it, we did our first we did our transaction with Focus in February of 2007. And while Buckingham has certainly done a tremendous amount of M&A activity since then, we waited over 3 years before we actually executed on our first deal. And there's a reason for that. One, we wanted to find the right partner to do this with. And we wanted to make sure that we were prepared to do it extremely well. The other thing I would say is, and it's certainly something that we should spend more time on also, is we needed to make sure that everybody was aligned on our why. Why were we actually going to implement this strategy? Yes, everybody can look at this and say it's a cool headline-making kind of an activity. They might even be able to say they understand the economics of why to do a transaction. But if there's not more than that, then I think they're really missing the mark. And the reality of the situation is we had a whole lot more. This for us was about garnering capabilities. So basically using M&A to bring on capabilities to help our clients even more. And we all have heard about the talent wars. And the shortage of talent that is out there for the future. Well, I see M&A as the greatest opportunity to bring talent into your organization. And it's not just advisor talent. We've actually brought on a tremendous amount of talent that is ultimately ascended to be leadership throughout our organization. And so that's been fantastic. And beyond capabilities and beyond talent, I also think that there's really, really important elements of geography and being where your clients are. And most of us have clients all over the country, right?
Right.
And it's a tremendous amount of wear and tear on our advisors to ultimately travel to see your clients, which I think is so critically important to an experience. And the reality is having more locations, having a broader geographic reach, can be really helpful to not only business strategies, but also making your clients feel more comfortable. And I think that that's a key point, though, is there has to be more beyond the economics. And I think that everybody has to really get on board with why and how it makes you better, not just bigger.
You know, you pointed a couple of things that I just want to reiterate here. First of all, that your firm really didn't pursue an M&A strategy until you'd been in business for more than 10 years, more like almost 15. And secondly, you took the time, not 1 year, but several years to really define what you were going to do. The third thing I'd like to just, as we close up this part, and then we'll talk a little bit to your colleague, Jeff. You actually have done quite a few transactions, but it hasn't been linear in terms of the acceleration. It's actually been almost, I don't know if it's logarithmic or exponential, but it's certainly been a rapidly accelerating pace. Can you say a little bit about how many transactions have you done how have you experienced that acceleration of that too?
We actually have now done well over 30 transactions, and you know, not all of them garner the headlines. And the reality is, we did our first, as I mentioned, in October of 2010, and we waited about another year to do our next. And then we waited about another year to do our third. But there's no way that anybody can build that out, for their first transaction. It has to be a process that evolves. And people have to be very purposeful about it and be willing to not just put in the time, the energy, the effort, and have patience, but also be willing to invest, putting in the capital to do this successfully.
Well, now I'd like to bring in our second guest, Jeff Johnson, who I think you'll find he has been very purposeful about his approach to the other side of this equation. So, Jeff, why don't we talk just for a minute about your firm and give us a high-level overview of what your firm was all about before being acquired by Adams Firm.
So, Executive Wealth Management was and is 10 people. At that time, we were managing between $300 and $325 million. What we really were looking for, we were technically acquired by Buckingham, legally, but what we really wanted was we wanted more of a merger, more of a blending in. We wanted to as Adam says, join forces and actually grow our business and grow all areas of the service that we were providing to our community. So initially, I was with a Wall Street firm and set up my own firm. Because I had discovered Swedro's book, the only investment guide you'll ever need, the first of 17 books that you'll need. You know, I really had embraced passive investment, and I wanted to be more client-centered. We wanted to do better work for fewer people, and so I left a Wall Street firm to start Executive Wealth Management in 2004. So basically, I started out as a sole practitioner with my longtime assistant. Over time, former colleagues joined the office, and we ended up being 10 people with $350 million or $325 million or so under management.
And what, you know, as you think through until you sold in April of 2017, so you had 13 years as an independent, did you have a long-range goal when you set out to do your own independent firm in 2004?
I guess the goals would have been, number one, serve clients. That's really the joy in the business. I mean, I think that's how people survive and endure the ups and downs of the markets and the news cycles is the joy of doing business with people you care about. Second thing was I really did want to take great care of my associates. We had a really generous benefits arrangement and basically unlimited personal time as needed. I did have some profit targets, but that kind of took a secondary role. And then there were some lifestyle considerations. I wanted to be able to come and go a little bit, as our business grew. We really had a good business, and we had things were really going well for us.
Well, I think there are many who are listening to our show today that can completely resonate with that and, frankly, like where they are today. But at some point, there was kind of a trigger event or two that led you to consider a move. So what was it that led you to realize it was time to do something different?
Sometimes it's important to take action, and sometimes it's urgent. Over time, all the listeners know that when our clients wait until it's urgent to make a decision, sometimes the choices are limited or just bad. And so I didn't want it to take my most valuable asset, my own personal and the cherished relationships I have, and ended up in a position where, you know, where we had to make choices that we didn't want to make. So I knew I had time to think about it. This all probably started 5 or 6 years ago. I had read all the books that the listeners have read. Especially of interest was The Ensemble Practice with Philip Polyviev. I had really enjoyed reading that. In one place in his book or in one of his talks, he said, the way to run a really great business is to run it as if you were going to sell it, even if you're not going to sell it. And so I really appreciated that, and I really thought about that, and I was not a seller. And so we made changes in the business that would, if you do make changes to your business that would be attractive to a buyer, then you're probably making good business decisions. So as I read his books and I started to get a little longer in the tooth, you know, well into the back nine of life, I started thinking about all the people that depended on our business, not just clients, but the associates and the associates' dependents. And, it's a pretty good number of people, 50 or 60 people, dependent on me making good decisions and being healthy. So I thought I'm not going to leave that to chance. And so I started thinking about, we used the word intentional before. I wanted to be really intentional about thinking this through and making the right decision, because I knew it was going to be just one chance to make the right decision.
I think you've got a very introspective process to it. And I would say, not all advisors do. Why don't you describe a little bit about how you... first of all, you also sat down and put this to paper. Describe that process a little bit.
So as I started thinking about what I really wanted to achieve, I knew that I didn't want to just do a succession plan. I mean, I was too far off for that. So I knew what I was looking for was a continuity plan. And so that was getting a good continuity plan takes a lot more work than a succession plan, because a succession plan is just really a little more about making sure that the transition happens and the exchange of money and value. And being in a continuity plan was finding the right partner for a continuity plan I thought might be harder. It actually was much easier once I got into it, started wading into it. So I was in Seattle in 2016. I took 4 sheets of yellow tablet paper, and I wrote questions. You know, life is about the questions we ask ourselves. And the first one was, is there a way that I could find a situation where my clients right now today would be better taken care of? And the second sheet at the top, I wrote down, is there a way my associates would have a better situation, you know, now and longer term with a continuity partner? Then the third question I wrote myself was, how could I take care of my stakeholders and my other partners in the office? Who, some wanted continuity like me. We did have one of our partners who was really looking for more of a succession, a retirement plan. How would we figure that out? Is there a way to do that? And then the last thing was, for me, is there a way that I could find what I'm looking for, which is to continue to be involved, continue to be a participant in the business, continue to work with clients, which I love, you know, and basically indefinitely. And so I started writing down all the possibilities for that, and it did happen that the Ensemble Practice office is there in Seattle. And I remember calling them and talking it over with them, and they graciously invited me to come over for a cup of coffee, which turned out to be a couple of pots of coffee, and actually gave me really great insight. And I have to tell you, that really helped me a lot to crystallize my thinking on what I wanted to achieve.
So that's one of your pieces of advice then is, you know, take the time to talk to third parties who really understand this and can give you perspective and wisdom. Isn't that right?
Well, of course, you know, Stephen Covey in his books always talks about start with the end at the beginning. Think about what you really want to achieve. And as I got a clearer focus on that, and that, you know, that really is harder, I think, for someone that wants to look into acquisition or look into a continuity or succession plan, is to really think through what you want to achieve and get down, drill down to the fine points of what you really want, and know what that is. Because you know, because I knew what I wanted to achieve, Adam and I were able to really talk things over pretty frankly and quickly about what are the things that we could do and what are the things that we couldn't do.
So you reached a decision that it was time to find a partner and probably sell to them. But what was that conclusion that you had reached that you wanted for yourself?
I had come to the conclusion that it was time for me to start looking, because I thought it might take a long time. At that time, I was probably 57 or 58 when I started that, and I'm 62 today. So we were acquired when I was 60. In 2017. So it actually happened fairly quickly. But I wouldn't have known if I'd have just been out searching if I didn't really know what I was looking for. And I wanted to be work with people that, you know, I respected and I knew what they would, it would be a great platform for me to take care of clients, that there would be a situation where my associates, you know, many have been with me a long time, you know, 20 and 30 years. I really cared about what happened to them. And so some of the other alternatives I looked at, none of those things were even present. So it was easy to eliminate some of the other choices fairly quickly.
So you identified Buckingham as a firm you wanted to talk to. So you reached out and began talking with Adam. Tell us a little bit about how that conversation went, what you were looking for, and ultimately how that led you wanting to move forward.
So I started with a visit the year before, just myself, and came for a day on my own nickel, and stayed overnight, had dinner with some of the people at the firm. I don't even think Adam and I met that day. He's incredibly busy and hardworking and was out of town or somewhere else. But I met Dave Levin, our president, and talked to quite a few people at the firm, had a great feeling about that, and went away thinking about this is a really good possibility. Then the next spring in May, actually 3 years ago, about right now, I brought our whole team down. And I kind of wanted to gauge their interest. I hadn't really told them what I thought, what I was thinking about completely. I wanted to know if they thought it was going to be a good fit. And frankly, I wanted to find out if the people at Buckingham Central, how they reacted to us. And I thought that would be real important to our ultimate decision. And I had no idea it would happen that quickly. But when we went back...
That's interesting it's interesting that you involved everybody, too. I think that's not everybody's comfortable necessarily or willing to do that. But I think that's great that you took that approach, especially since you knew what you wanted to do.
Well, thanks. A continuity plan for me meant that everybody on the team was going to be well taken care of on this, and it was going to fit their situation. So I knew that it had to be, I knew that we all had to come to some kind of consensus on that.
And what was it that led you to sense that this is the right fit? Because you know, one of the things I think about today that I've talked on in our first season of podcasts is just the number of options for firms like yours to find partners and to consider selling to. But ultimately, I think you found this to be the right fit. Tell me a little bit, what are some of the elements that were there for you?
Well, I think it was May 24th, 2016. Everyone else on our team was getting a tour in some other room, and Adam and I sat down for the first time, and he started making notes on the whiteboard, and he said, here's really what we're looking for, and here's what they are. The first thing that he looks at is, who are the people? What's their culture like? Are these people that we want to work together? And he wrote that down first. And that was I thought that was impressive. The second thing is ideology. Are we going to fit on the same platform? You know, and for us that was a perfect fit because we've embraced passive investment for a long time. And the third thing was the service model. And I said, what do you mean by service model? And ultimately, what it comes right down to at Buckingham is the client comes first. You know, our founders talked about we're going to do the right thing for the client every time, no matter what. And you know, a lot of people in business talk about that, but you know, sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. But I found that to be a passion with the firm. Then number four. Now we get on to number four. We talked about are the economics going to work? And I thought that was really important that the economics came fourth on the list because everyone else it comes first. You know, how much money can we make? And then number five was, is it going to be possible for us to integrate our systems? Are we going to be able to get on the same platform? You know, who is the custodian? And then the sixth thing is, what can we do to supercharge the results? Is there a way that we can compound our efforts? And as Adam said before, can you truly make one plus one equal three? It is. And so that kept coming back to me, and I kept rethinking that. And I knew that was going to be a fit for us. And the other thing was, unlike most of the in-house succession plans, this was going to be kind of a sure thing, you know, because I had been troubled by friends in the business that had where the founders and the leaders had to take haircuts on the sale when they sold to younger partners for the reasons that Adam talked about with the transaction with Focus earlier. I have and had a great next gen team, but they end up having to pay for the company out of after tax earnings. They had a difficult time raising children, sending them to college. You know, I just thought that there was way too much risk that if there was a good alternative, that we shouldn't do that. So it made it a pretty easy decision. All those things fit together. I felt like it was a sure thing. I felt confident that the clients would be well served, and they have been. Felt like my associates would be well taken care of, and they have been. So I just have no complaints.
Great. Well, I'd like now, you know, for both of you, talk about the experience of the transaction as you went through it together. I mean, Adam, you know, for Jeff, he's gone through one transaction. You've mentioned that you've participated in 30 and plenty more coming. Tell us a little bit about how you remember this and saw this process and what you were trying to accomplish through it.
Sure. So, I mean, as Jeff mentioned, the kind of the continuum on the whiteboard, which is the first thing that I am ever trying to do is figure out, are these people with the same hearts that we have? Do they care about the same things that we care about? Are they putting client's interest first and foremost? And is that the reason that they do what they do? And so, so that's kind of the first threshold that I always go through, which is to understand, have I met someone in life that shares my values, that shares my, you know, my mission, if you will. And if that's the case, then that's kind of where, once you pass that threshold, you can dig in deeper. You can say, all right, what do these folks bring to the table? Right. And again, a lot of folks just think about this as a financial transaction, as we keep saying, but it's the idea of, how does this make us better? How does joining forces together bring something to the table that benefits all of the different constituents that Jeff did such a great job of explaining? And I always call that, by the way, the three-legged stool. These things have to make sense for clients, for team members, and for stakeholders. And if you can solve for that equation and come up with really cool pros in each of those three categories, then you've got a good basis to be able to move forward. So when I met Jeff, again, I'm sure your listeners can already tell, this is a dynamic, impressive person. And I think he'll be the first to tell you the folks on his team are of equal caliber. And so that's the first thing that, you know, that I ultimately noticed was who these people were, the standards that they had, the pride they had in their client relationships and the work that they were doing. And, you know, it was pretty obvious we were simpatico from the very beginning.
So as you're putting together the deal itself, between the both of you, how did you evaluate different, as much as you're willing to share about this, how did you evaluate the different options that each of you were considering in the deal, you know, even reaching agreement on valuation and how you structured the deal?
So in all of the approaches that we take, we do deep discovery. Why are you thinking about joining forces? What do you hope to achieve? You know, you personally, what would you like to get out of it? What are you trying to sell for with your team members? Are there other shareholders that need to be thought through? And are their circumstances or situations differently or different than you know, than maybe a majority owner? In most circumstances, there's initial consideration that's the upfront money. It's guaranteed. And, you know, and that can come in many forms. Some folks want that in cash. Some folks that want that in equity. Some folks want that in some combination. And different stakeholders sometimes want different things. You know, there's usually some form of a transition payment. And then there's some form of a growth earnout, which is, you know, a creative way to allow folks to go along for a little bit of the ride of their business. You know, once the transaction has been consummated, it's really dictated by the goals, the objectives of the transaction partner. And you've got to be open-minded and flexible.
Well, wonderful. Great advice from both of you around being really deliberate and intentional and knowing what you're going for. Commit to it as a real strategy. And your examples about what you've experienced together and how you evaluated those decisions have been a tremendous help to our audience. So I want to thank you and wish you both, Adam and Jeff, continued success and luck. And thank you very much for participating here on Future Ready through M&A. And we look forward to having you back again another time.
Well, thanks, Scott. It has been truly our pleasure and just an honor to be on this podcast with you and with Jeff and to share a little bit of our wisdom and experience.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Future Ready through M&A. I'm Scott Slater, and we're Future Ready.
Future Ready through M&A is a production of Fidelity's Clearing and Custody Solutions with help from Collective Next. Got a question or a comment? Get in touch at fidelitymainsights@fmr.com. Any reproductions, transcripts, or rebroadcast of this content are forbidden without explicit permission. For investment professional use only, not for distribution to the public as sales material in any form. For more on Professor Aswath Damodaran and the McKinsey study, see Aswath Damodaran on Acquisitions, Just Say No, published in February 2019 from Enterprising Investor, a CFA Institute blog. The content provided herein is general in nature and is for informational purposes only. This information is not individualized and is not intended to serve as the primary or sole basis for your decisions, as there may be other factors you should consider. Fidelity Clearing and Custody Solutions does not provide financial or investment advice. You should conduct your own due diligence and analysis based on your specific needs. Information provided in this document is for informational and educational purposes only. To the extent any investment information in this material is deemed to be a recommendation, it is not meant to be impartial investment advice or advice in a fiduciary capacity, and is not intended to be used as a primary basis for you or your client's investment decisions. Fidelity and its representatives may have a conflict of interest in the products and services mentioned in this material because they have a financial interest in them and receive compensation directly or indirectly in connection with the management, distribution, and/or servicing of these products or services, including Fidelity funds, certain third-party funds and products, and certain investment services. The third-party providers listed herein are neither affiliated with nor an agent of Fidelity and are not authorized to make representations on behalf of Fidelity. Their input herein does not suggest a recommendation or endorsement by Fidelity. This information was provided by the third-party providers and subject to change. Fidelity takes no responsibility whatsoever nor in any way endorses any such content. There is no form of legal partnership, agency, affiliation, or similar relationship among an investment professional, the third-party service providers, and Fidelity Investments. Nor is such a relationship created or implied by the information herein. Third-party trademarks and service marks are the property of their respective owners. All other trademarks and service marks are the property of FMR, LLC, or its affiliated companies. Fidelity Institutional Asset Management, FIAM, provides registered investment products via Fidelity Distributors Company, LLC, and institutional asset management services through FIAM, LLC, or Fidelity Institutional Asset Management Trust Company. Fidelity Clearing and Custody Solutions provides clearing, custody, and other brokerage services through National Financial Services, LLC, or Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, members NYSC, SIPC, 200 Seaport Boulevard, Z2B1, Boston, Massachusetts, 02210, 2019 FMR LLC. All rights reserved. 888072.2.0.